You're listening to The Mumcast, the best weekly comic book podcast recorded in Southampton, England on Thursday nights. In our 161st episode, we talk about this week's comics, and in this week's spotlight, James talks about Asterix the Legionary. Around the mic tonight are...
Hello, I'm James.
Hi, I'm Nick.
Hi, I'm Jane.
Huzzah!
That was brilliant.
First take, it was brilliant.
I have to hold the book.
Is that how you read?
Your face gurning over the top of it.
Wasn't gurning.
That's just his face, Jane. Yeah. Jeez. Have a heart.
It's in a permagurn.
A permagurn. Yeah. With your greasy head.
With my greasy head and my permagurn face.
I like your greasy head.
He's nice. Oh. Shiny.
How are you, chaps?
All right.
This fine Thursday evening in Southampton.
You're right.
I am hyper-energised.
Oh, good.
I'm feeling pretty good.
That'll be good for the podcast.
I'm so sleepy, I want to die.
Yeah, I've got mould on my chest.
Have you?
Yeah, I think it's probably what it is.
This week, I have been getting up and walking the dogs early. I know I'm a dog owner and we're supposed to do it all the time, but I'm very lazy and so don't normally. And this week, I've been getting up extra early to do it. I've been getting up at 6:30, 6:40. Well, this morning, 6:50, but early. And I'm knackered. I don't know how you manage it, James.
My wife forces me.
Okay, yeah, mine stays asleep. She likes that. She likes sleeping. So there's that. And I saw my nephews the weekend. They're really good value for money.
Are they?
Yeah, we did this thing that you might have heard of. There were we had fireworks.
I've heard of those, yes.
And my sister's father-in-law, which apparently doesn't make him my father-in-law-law.
Really?
It's I don't really know how that works. But he, a whole bunch of people came round to my sister's house, including my father-in-law-law, well, her father-in-law, who brought fireworks. And what he did was he bought something like a whole bundle of fireworks.
Something like a whole bundle?
Like maybe 18.
18 fireworks.
Or something like that, yeah. Of all different sorts. And then this one big box that apparently cost an awful lot of money as well, which was going to be the finale. And effectively what it was we had fireworks for an hour or so, or maybe a little bit less than that, but lots of fireworks. It felt like longer because it was cold. So fireworks for a while. My nephew, the smaller of my two nephews, was seeing fireworks for the first time. He stayed almost entirely expressionless the whole way through, which concerned me a little bit because I was wondering if maybe it was a 1,000-yard stare, sort of PTSD thing, but he was fine afterwards, so it's okay. But so we had about an hour of fireworks with them setting one off, walking back, it going off, then like waiting a moment and then going a couple of minutes and then going back, and that's like the leisurely pace of that, or leisurely yeah. pace of that going backwards and forwards. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah,
leisurely going backwards and forwards. And then they put the final one up, and we thought, oh, I wonder what this is going to be. This is going to be one or two big-ass fireworks. Yeah. It was effectively the same amount of fireworks as we'd had the whole rest of the night, but over a two-minute period.
Oh, wow.
So basically, we could have just had one of those.
Oh, was it one of them multi-boxes?
Yeah.
You
just light it once, and it just goes...
We bought one of those the first year that we were living in the flat we're in now, because we got a big garden.
You have got a big garden.
But we forgot about all the trees. And that most terrifying 5 minutes of my life was that box dispensed its contents.
Spurting flame into the sky.
Fiery death into our neighbours' gardens.
Yeah. Mm. Well, if they didn't like it, why do they live next to you?
Well, yeah, it is their fault.
What did you guys do? Jane, what did you do? I want to know.
Oh,
this week, I mean.
This week, After I went to some foreign land and slayed some dragon,
was that this week?
Yeah, apparently.
I went into town and felt like slaying other things.
Was town an absolute nightmare?
Yes, it was. But it got quite early, which was good for me.
What sort of time do you call early? Because I'm really interested, because we don't seem to be able to leave the house much before 12:15.
Oh, we're in town by 8:30.
On the weekend. I don't know how people do that.
I don't know how people wake up at that time on a weekend.
We don't seem to be able to organise ourselves to get out anywhere before midday, despite the fact that I'm up at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Even my nephews didn't manage to wake me up before 8:30.
I don't know how we do it. You're brilliant. And you wash?
Yeah. I wash my hair and I blow dry as well.
Fuck the bed.
It's all about getting up at the same time as I would do for work.
But I do that and I still don't get out till, admittedly, my wife and child are lazy, but I still don't get out.
Those lazy bastards. Yeah.
You'd think like 10 o'clock was achievable, wouldn't you?
You'd think.
Yeah.
No. 8:30, seriously? Mm-hmm. Is that so that you can get back before most people have woken up? I noted in town this week that the coffee place that I frequent, I'm not going to say the name because I'm hoping we'll get them as a sponsor at some point, so it's pointless saying the name for nothing. Who are now doing toffee nut lattes, which is very nice. It's that time of year, although I did nearly have a heart attack after eating it,
Doesn't the recent well-publicised tax avoidance issues with the place you like to go to, don't that bother you nothing?
No.
Okay.
Should it, though?
Well, I don't know. It's like the year, isn't it?
I mean, I pay a fair amount for it. They're not, they're not taking it directly from me. Obviously, I would rather they paid the right amount.
I don't think you necessarily have to take a moral stance if you
But surely they're a corporation. They've probably done far worse than that.
Oh, probably.
So, I mean, I'm not saying that's okay. I'm just saying I really like their coffee.
I don't care for it that much.
But, well, I mean, I don't really like their coffee. I really like being surrounded by people on iPads and stuff.
I like, whenever I want to go and look at people using Apple devices, I go there.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I've noticed that they've started having Christmas stuff up. I haven't strayed into town, though. Was town a real nightmare of Christmas stuff?
It wasn't too full on, but I had quite a specific shopping trip, so...
For what?
I didn't... For various items.
List.
Huh?
List.
It's a quite boring list.
Popped into Kentucky Fried Chicken for breakfast, popped into Ann Summers for presents... And then into Greg's.
You've just
for lunch.
Described James's list. How did you get James's list?
I thought Greg's is almost directly next door to Ann Summers. Do you think there's a reason for that?
Yes. It's because once you've got your blood up, looking at all of the stuff in Ann Summers, you need your appetite's all.
You
want to
put a pasty on your cock?
No, in your mouth.
Because they're sold at an ambient temperature, aren't they? They're warm, so. God. I can see why you might think a Cornish pasty might be a substitute for a human companion.
It stuns me that A, you don't realise that you'd be far more likely to get a steak bacon, Greg's, and B, or a baked bean and cheese melt, sausage and cheese melt.
I'm not sure I want to put my penis inside something with baked beans in it.
And they're piping hot. You wouldn't want to do it. They're not ambient temperature. What does ambient temperature mean? They're a temperature that's all around it.
Are they not body temperature? I thought they
They're not body temperature. Do you think they keep them in their armpits or something?
Do you think you could ask specifically for a body temperature one? Hello, I'm feeling amorous. Do you have any body temperature pies or pastries? And a private room.
So you went into town and it was a nightmare and made you want to kill things.
It was all right to a point, and then lots of people were in town, and then we ended up having lunch in Burger King, which I didn't really want, and witnessed a mother feeding her very young baby the inside of a chip.
Like a bird. Was she sucking the inside of the chip out and regurgitating it into the baby's mouth?
She was mashing up bits in her finger and she was shoving her finger in the baby's mouth.
What a good mum.
And that made me really, really uncomfortable and I kind of wanted to just leave. It was packed as well.
Can I just clarify, when you say chip, you mean fry, don't you?
A fry,
you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there isn't an awful lot of potato in the average fry, is there?
No. But I think it is mostly
air
liquid.
And fat.
You just break it open and then...
Yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Jane, but we had fish and chips when we were up at my sister's house. My sister and my brother-in-law, he actually is my in-law.
And didn't your father have a fish and chip business when you were young? So you somewhat of a connoisseur.
Yeah, yeah. So and so I don't like doing things by half measures. And so I got Heineken chips. And apparently what they do is, and I've never seen this, but apparently they do it up north a little bit. The chips had been, not in the same batter that the fish goes in, but the chips had been sort of like put in a really thin batter. And then they'd been fried. And they came out really crispy.
Oh, wow.
Really crispy. Mm. Oh, my goodness. They were so nice.
No, I dig that. Sounds nice.
They're not like battered. They don't
just
kind of...
To make it crispy. That's a really good idea.
I wonder if anywhere here does that. I doubt it.
We should open a chip shop that sells comics or something.
I never want to work in another chip shop.
Oh, dude, I'll fry. It's fine.
I don't really want to work in a chip shop.
I look like I should work in a chip shop, I think.
You do?
You don't look like. You sound like
I'm fat and I'm greasy. Fat and greasy.
Greasy.
I should probably work in a fish and chip shop.
Greasy.
And I'll probably have a pizza tonight. What I would bring back... is the cottage pie dinner they used to do in the chip shop near me, right? And what you get is a...
Microwave cottage pie.
A microwave cottage pie, right? But they'd microwave it exquisitely. So it had, like, the slightly hard bits in the corner.
Oh, nice.
Which I think is a treat when you got a microwave cottage pie. Hard bits in the corner, hard bits of burnt meat. I like that. Then there'll be a layer of baked beans...
On top.
I'm salivating while I'm talking to you about this.
I'm getting quite hungry.
A layer of baked beans. We always talk about food. A layer of baked beans on top of the shepherd, the cottage pie. And then chips.
That sounds really good.
It was fucking awesome, I tell you.
When,
it was one of the more expensive items. It was about £1.60.
I think those microwave meals started coming in at into fish and chip shops at the time.
This is the late 80s.
When I was living in one. Mm. And... I think the first time I ever had lasagna, it was one of those. And I had a growth spurt that roughly corresponded, because I was very small, and I had a growth spurt that roughly corresponded with living in the fish and chip shop. Mm. And I think it's because I used to go in and snack on, because I could sneak in and snack on one of these lasagna things and no one would notice. So I just microwave one and snack on it.
Oh, I used to do that when...
Oh, God, it was lovely.
When I was a chef, like my first job, I was a chef. And it's brilliant. I used to do the 1 till 11 shift. Mm. So 1 in the afternoon to 11. Although, to be fair, I used to start at 11:45 to help out with the lunch rush. Because if I strolled up at 1 o'clock halfway through lunch, I got treated like shit. As opposed to just really badly. But after like 10 o'clock, if it was quiet service, all the other chefs would go home. Which meant I had all of the pre-prepared lasagnas at my mercy. So what I used to do is I used to over-microwave lasagna. So you had the crispy burnt bits in the corner, obviously. And a couple of bread rolls from the bread roll tray before I emptied it at the end of my shift. And go and sit and read a trade publication in the head chef's office. And then from time to time, the sous chef... would catch me and go, "Hey, James, you fucking fat bastard, get back to fucking work."
Arnold Schwarzenegger was your sous chef?
No, but he sounded a bit like that. Wow. He was called Olivier and he was a wanker.
Oh, okay. Hearing that, wonder how really, after doing odd bits of catering work in my early 20s, how we actually survived.
It taught me not to cry when people shouted at you.
I worked in the Marks and
I never did cry when they shouted at me. I just want to, you know.
You wanted to.
I still
were
got
you were the chef.
Better.
Were you not shouting at other people?
No, I was the commie chef. I was the lowest of all the chefs. I was the KP was treated better than I was.
The crisps were treated better than you were.
The kitchen porter, I beg your pardon.
I was a kitchen porter a couple of times.
The kitchen porter I worked with worked so long at the hotel I worked at that there was a piece about him in the local newspaper when he retired.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I remember a particular time in working in, I think it was probably Marks and Spencer's or BHS, no, BHS, as like just, you were kind of kitchen porter. There were a whole bunch of temps.
That is the lowest of low as far as kitchen porter's concerned.
And you're in there, and yeah, and you were having to, and you were cleaning tables and stuff like that as well. And at the end of the day, when all of the food was being chucked away, all of the temps who were, you know, you had to be skint to be doing that sort of work, would all be clustered around, all these guys and I think maybe a couple of girls, clustered around, because the food was quite nice.
Yeah.
getting handfuls of this food that was going to... not. It wasn't off the plates. It was like just being chucked out of the pans and stuff. Just getting handfuls of it and scoffing over the... That's disgusting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Scoffing over the cleaning tray.
That's what you do.
Wow. I may never eat in a restaurant again.
Did you know the best night I ever had there was when we had a function on, and it was a really expensive function, and they had beef Wellington, and there were offcuts of beef Wellington scuffed the whole night.
It's awful.
Oh, it was amazing.
How did I
was
not?
Liking. Oh, and there were little jars of Bernays sauce, and you're just getting lumps of pastry and beef and dumping it in the. Oh!
I wasn't in bad shape in my early 20s as well. I don't understand how this even.
We should stop talking about.
What else did you do this week, Jane?
Just been watching Homeland and various other amazing TV programs.
Mm. Well, that has been amazing this
Homeland
this
is
last couple
amazing.
Of weeks.
And Breaking Bad, which has to be rationed to me because I usually overconsume and then get a really high Breaking Bad feeling and then get really sad because I've watched too many and I can't ever watch them again for the first time.
Mm.
That's it. James is pulling a silly face at me.
What have you been up to, James?
I went to a fireworks display too at the weekend. My in-laws put one on around their house and it was nice.
Your in-laws or your in-laws?
No, my in-laws. Right. I have no brothers or sisters, so I don't have any in-laws.
You're an only child?
Can you not tell?
You astound me.
Fuck you. And they bought...
That was irony, listener.
They bought two boxes of small to medium-sized garden fireworks.
Oh.
So it was a modest display, but in keeping with the size of their back garden.
Okay.
And Scarlett enjoyed it a great deal, and my extended family made my nephew cry because they teased him about his girlfriend that had recently split up with him.
How old is he?
10.
That's awful.
Yeah, they're quite mean.
No,
but then,
that's not right.
But then he made up for it later by saying that he thought I should fart in his grandma's face within a rear shot. To be fair, I helped her hear it by repeating what he just said and telling him I didn't think that was appropriate.
Why was he telling you? Is he not capable of farting himself?
No, he was very capable towards the end. He's a very naughty boy, but he's also quite lovable too. And he was very grateful that I bought him Superman Family Adventures.
Huzzah! Oh, we've been playing lots of Batman Lego as well. I just thought I should mention that. It's vaguely comic-related.
On the
Xbox
games console.
Yes.
Just in case we get sponsored by them.
Oh, yeah, on my games console, I was playing a video game that starred a character from a comic and was... building block themed. Do you think I'm covered there?
I've also been enjoying, now I've got the internet back, I've also been enjoying a...
pornography?
No, I haven't actually. Oh no, that's a lie, yes I have. An American adaptation of a British sitcom classic through a popular on-demand service on my games console.
In between
recommended us. By an amazing friend.
If it's The Office... Was his amazing friend the whole damn internet?
Oh,
and
I've been dropping him and Nicola Office Facts as we've been watching.
Yeah, it is actually good fun. It's like
facts about the program or facts about officers.
No, about the program and the cast.
One of the things I miss about watching a box set on an on demand service is you don't get the extras you get from the DVD. So watching it with Jane,
it's like having a director's commentary.
Although I swear to God, if I had a pound for every time she said to me, I don't think I'm spoiling anything by telling you this, I'd be a very rich man.
But I usually tell you that people are just really good.
You haven't actually spoiled
anything
yet.
No, I'm really conscious of that. I do have to be tentatively, because you watch episodes when I'm not around, obviously, and I have to tentatively ask if you've seen a particular episode. Mm. And you'd seen it anyway, and that's one of my favourites. So.
I think we're a bit behind on it, but I can't say where we are up to, because... James might not be there yet.
Well, you can specify season.
I can't remember which season. Oh. I can sort of say what happened.
No, that's not.
I think it might be the season when Dwight dies.
I didn't like it when Dwight... there might be people who haven't watched it. Just because I'm behind doesn't mean...
Yeah, but you're about 4 or 5 years
There's a considerable change to Dwight's working circumstances for a period. And I didn't care for that.
I can't remember. We'll talk about it after. when we're not talking about The Office, are we done with our weeks? I think we are.
Yeah.
Aren't we? When we're not talking about The Office,
I won the lottery. No, I'm not. Oh,
you didn't, though,
I didn't
did you?
Really, no.
Oh, Nick's eyes lit up then. Did you?
Am I in your circle of people? If you get like 70 million or something, would I get a million?
Oh, most certainly. You're a very close friend indeed.
Good. Is a million enough to buy the house I want and open all of the businesses I want
quite,
and have a car?
I could quite honestly say if I won £70 million, I would most certainly bung you a million.
Results. Do you do the lottery?
You get five, dear.
Thanks.
Do you do the lottery?
No.
I said that, I remember saying to Nicola, if I... Nicola?
Nicola. I can at least say both of your names.
That's my mistress.
If I won the lottery, an unspecified amount, but it'd be a big amount, that I would pay off your mortgage and get you a new kitchen and give you loads of money.
Okay. Thank you.
I don't know why I had to specify to get you a new kitchen. I don't know.
Cause
what she's saying is she doesn't like your kitchen.
I'm down to one fucking drawer in the kitchen.
No, it is.
Three of the four drawers have now broken.
I know it's something you really want, and that would be the first thing I'd get you.
I've never been quite so... The third one just fell apart in my hands the other day. I was just bereft. It was a horrible thing. I'm like, no, please!
When you broke the third one, was Nicola complaining about it? Was she angry?
Oh, Nicola's very chilled.
Nicola, is she?
Nicola is a very chilled out lady.
Nicola. Yeah, Nicola.
I am not going to sit here and paint my wife as a nag, because it's patently untrue.
Who's your wife again?
Nicola.
Nicola. When we're not talking about James' kitchen.
And my daughter said...
Why are you hitting me?
And my daughter said her surname for the first time at the weekend. She almost made me cry in mixed company.
Does she have the same surname as you?
Yeah.
I didn't
know she was cognizant of it. And apparently it's quite unusual in our age group. They were telling me at nursery. Anyway, go on. Daddy boast.
No, it's good. I liked it. I like your daughter probably
she's awesome.
More than I like you.
No, I like her more
and
than I like
you
me.
A lot.
I like her more than I like me by a fucking country mile.
I think I like her seven times more than I like you.
Oh, Christ, yeah, no, that's fair.
Okay, good. Jane, how much more do you like Scarlett than you like James?
I'd rather not say.
You don't like to play favourites?
Yeah.
Well, I'm happy for everyone to like her more than they like me.
I think they do.
I think she's considerably better than I am.
Yep. She's a better podcaster as well.
No,
think I adore your daughter. I don't adore you. I like you a lot.
Isn't it funny? Because now, I guess it's the way you use your words, isn't it? Because for some reason that feels crushing.
Oh, I didn't mean to do it that way. I have different feelings towards your daughter.
Oh, no, it's just a bit weird.
No, okay. I care for your daughter. No, because that's not fair, because I care for you and Nicola too.
Oh, Christ.
When
we're not talking about how much Jane cares
Jane and I are going to start doing a comic book podcast with Scarlett as well, but you shouldn't feel bad,
because
that's going to go out on Sundays. We want to have more time to consider our books with Scarlett, because she's got a lot more insight to offer.
The way she reviewed Ben and Holly's Little Kingdom was amazing.
Well, she was very fond of that Mad magazine she nabbed out of. Mine! My magazine! Mine! And that was her review of Mad.
Not her worry.
No.
When we're not talking about Scarlett, we sometimes talk about comics. We do it here on the podcast. We also do it on the internet. You can talk to us. You can send us emails and contributions to...
momcast@gmail.com.
You can also talk to Jane on Twitter at...
JaneMomb.
And James on Twitter at...
James Momb.
And me on Twitter at Nick's Site. We also have a Twitter account for the podcast called Momb Comics. The website is called mombcomics.com, but you can also subscribe to it on iTunes or a number of other services, and most of the services that you can subscribe to a podcast on allow you the opportunity to leave a review, and apparently it is really, really good. If you leave a review for us, especially if it's a positive one. I finally got around to reading the ones on iTunes. I might have mentioned it last week, but I finally got around to reading the reviews on iTunes that someone left for us, and I kind of filled up a little bit at work. But I cry a lot at work anyway, so I mean, it's probably nobody noticed. Have I missed anything? Oh, and we're on Facebook and Google Plus.
Tell everyone how much it costs.
What?
How much does the podcast cost?
The podcast costs...
Free.
Costs free.
Costs free.
There are more than 10 hours of... I was going to say entertainment, but it's probably less than 10
more
hours.
More than 10 hours?
More than 10 hours.
More than 100 hours.
Well, no, entertainment. At least half an hour. If you go through 161 podcasts, at least half an hour of entertainment.
20 minutes.
20 minutes, half an hour, easily.
It's not all... Counting the outtakes, maybe about 30 minutes.
If you edit together our best bits, you've probably got a decent half-hour show, don't you?
Yeah. At least half a quarter of an hour.
That's with an intro and outro bumper, though, to explain what you're listening to.
Yeah, and a little bit of music.
And
some of Max's... you'd have to include one of Max's contributions, one of David's contributions, and the other people who've contributed...
Matt and Clarky and Dave.
Yeah, but Dave and Max have sent us the most. I'll cut this bit out. Shall we talk about this week's comics?
Yes, James.
James,
you're first. Mr. Spotlighter.
Nick, I've got a number of questions I need to ask you.
What are these questions, James? I endeavour to have the answers.
Do you like dinosaurs?
Yes.
Do you like clever monkeys?
Yes.
Do you like an intriguing mystery?
Sometimes, unless the mystery is related to where things I am looking for are.
Do you like fun?
Sometimes.
Do you like Spider-Man?
Spider-Man, yes, I love Spider-Man, he makes me happy.
Then, Nick.
Yes?
You would love Avenging Spider-Man 14 from Marvel Comics.
Huzzah!
For it contains all of those things.
I like the front cover, he looks like he's about to be et.
But, yeah, it's $3.99 and includes a free digital copy.
Of this same
Avenging
comic.
Avenging Spider-Man, yeah.
Okay.
Avenging Spider-Man is the book where basically it's the team-up book.
Yes.
For Spider-Man, he teams up with various, not necessarily A-list characters. In this book, the team-up is with Devil, Dinosaur and Moon Boy.
Huzzah! Moon Boy, I've never really understood why he's called Moon Boy.
No.
And Devil, Dinosaur and Moon Boy, I think the first time I saw them, they were drawn by Jack Kirby. Mm. I suspect that they were very much a Jack Kirby invention, and they kind of creeped me out a little bit. But I've come to realise that the things that creeped me out when I was younger are probably awesome.
Well, they are awesome denizens of the Savage Land.
One of them is an intelligent monkey.
That's right, and the other one is a big red dinosaur.
Who isn't the devil.
He isn't, no. He's nice. He's Moon Boy's mate. A Moon Boy is very clever, even though he sounds like he isn't, because he speaks a lizard language.
A lizard language?
Yeah, so it
he's a monkey
like,
that speaks a lizard language.
It sounds
language.
Like he's going, ooh, 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 rawk, 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 like a monkey, but actually he's saying some very intelligent things in lizard language.
To Devil Dinosaur?
Yeah.
Would Devil Dinosaur beat Old One Eye in a fight?
Oh.
Is Devil Dinosaur a Tyrannosaurus?
Mm.
Would he beat Devil Dinosaur in a fight, or Satanus? Not Devil Dinosaur, he couldn't beat himself in a fight.
Well, no, he'd probably be a stalemate.
Do you know who I mean by Old One Eye?
I know, I thought you were talking about the dude from 2000 AD, you're not though, are you?
The first one was Old One Eye, and then there was Satanus, and now Gorehead. I was working up to Gorehead.
Oh, okay.
Do you think he could beat Gorehead in a fight?
No.
Because Gorehead never dies.
No, Gorehead's something else, isn't he?
He is.
Actually, I think Gorehead might actually be a devil dinosaur.
Yeah, I think he might be a Satan dinosaur. Sorry, James, carry on. Who wrote it? Who drew it?
Oh, sorry, I should tell you these things. Cullen Bunn wrote it.
And I love his name so much.
Gabriel Delotto drew it beautifully, actually. The colourist is Domo Ayamara.
Domo Ayamara.
That's it. And it's probably worth mentioning all of the creative team, because I think it looks absolutely beautiful.
It does, it looks like colour painted.
Yeah, it does, it's really, really nice. I think Superman, Spider-Man looks awesome as well. I like how they have drawn him. Peter Parker finds himself in the Savage Land with his chums from Horizon Labs, because they're going to do some research. But all goes a bit awry, because it seems that someone's been monkeying about with some of the dinosaurs, genetically mutating them.
Monkeying about?
Yeah, in the Savage Land. Peter Parker tries to get to the bottom of this, gets in the way of Moon Boy and Devil Dinosaur. Devil Dinosaur. I thought I got that wrong.
Because I was talking about other dinosaurs.
You did. Other dinosaurs are available.
Yes.
After winning them back, because apparently, in a recent issue of a book I don't read, Moon Boy and Devil Dinosaur had reason to distrust the heroes of the Marvel Universe. But Peter Parker wins him back on side and they adventure together.
He's so amiable.
There's a second part to this. really lovely premise. It's a proper rip snorter adventure. It's really good fun. Lots of action, lots of witty dialogue, crazy characters that are made plausible through very clever acting and very clever writing. It's one of my favourite titles, this. And you told me apparently it's going to be shit canned soon.
I don't know if it's going to be shit canned. I'm not sure what its future is in the whole change around and stuff.
All right. It's brilliant. The creative team have changed, and it's just as much fun as it was previously.
Because there's some suggestion that it might not be Peter Parker in the outfit soon.
All right.
Can I have a look?
It's such a good
book. Is the scale of the dinosaur's mouth the same throughout?
I think it's slightly different from the cover, but I think it's extra big for dramatic effect. On the cover, maybe.
I see, because it's terrifying on the cover.
It is. He's pretty terrifying in the book, to be honest with you.
Dinosaurs fucking rock.
They do rock.
I'm glad they're not still alive, though.
I actually did have a very happy feeling in my tummy all the way through reading that. It was awesome.
That means you're happy.
That does mean I'm happy, and I am happy. Second up is the second part of John Layman and Jason Fabok's Batman Detective Comics. It's issue 14, $3.99 from DC Comics. Continues the story of Cobblepot trying to bring Bruce Wayne down a peg or two, quite frankly. Manages to end up looking like a hero after saving Bruce Wayne from an assassination attempt that he himself put in motion. Damien tries to talk Bruce into taking the Penguin down straight away, but Bruce is an old hand at this sort of thing, and he's basically saying, slowly, slowly, catchy monkey.
He says that? Does he say that?
I'm paraphrasing him.
What does he say?
Well, God, all right.
Don't do that.
He says... Do you want me to basically do his
No, own? If there's a lot of it, then don't worry about it.
No, there is
it.
A lot of dialogue with him saying...
Yeah, and I slowly, slowly, catchy monkey probably... covers it.
That's right. But his methods bring him directly into the path of Poison Ivy, who has a bit of a surprise in store for him.
Is it plant related?
Kind of isn't, no.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah. She's awesome in it, actually. She went good, and she's gone a bit bad again now, as she should. There's some lovely interplay between the two of them, where she's attempting to control him using her pheromones, and there's some very nice inner monologue from Bruce, or Batman, sorry, during that. It's lovely. I enjoyed John Layman's first issue, but wasn't entirely made up. But now I'm enjoying it very much. It's nice to be buying Detective Comics again as well, because I wasn't really feeling it a while ago. But a thoroughly enjoyable, slow-burning detective tale. And some great character work in this issue as well.
She uses her pheromones in Batman Lego, and you kiss people, and then they explode into the Lego pieces, and you get a little stud.
Oh, wow, cool.
Which is quite cool.
She makes people with her pheromones, she makes them feel like studs.
Yes. Yeah. That, I think, was what they were getting at with the whole Lego thing.
Really? Oh, you think it was a pun?
I don't think it was a pun. Hello, Jane.
Hello, Nick. This week I picked up issue 4 of Harvest, which is written by AJ Lieberman and by Colin Lorimer. This is following Dr. Ben, the struck-off surgeon who has severe alcoholism and drug problems.
Excellent.
Who was recruited by an underground organisation to harvest organs, human organs, to sell to very rich people who'd over-partied lifestyles, who basically just ruined their organs, but very much a big money-making scheme. But even though Dr. Ben has been struck off, his moral gauge just went wild, and he's just like, I shouldn't be doing this. This is wrong. But he's a bit of a prick, which is really... All of him.
Is he mostly shaft? Or a bit of tip? What?
He looks a bit like you, so I don't know how you describe that.
Oh, mostly shaft.
Okay.
Would you describe yourself as a circumcised or uncircumcised prick?
No, that's just... let's go with the visual representation. I'm just talking metaphors here. He's an idiot. But he's got nothing to lose. He's so down on his ass, it doesn't matter what happens to him, so he wants to do the right thing. And in this issue, everything's really heightened. It's all these, like, you're on the edge of your seat because you don't know if he's going to get caught, you don't know what's going to happen. It's really, really good. It's funny, but it's really dark in places. As you can imagine, harvesting live people's organs. But I don't think it's the theme. I think it's the main thing, tearing people up and getting bits from them. Mm. No, actually, that's not fair. It is body. I was just remembering a couple of scenes. There is some quite serious body horror in it, but that just kind of goes with the darkness and the humour and also the tenseness of it. Art's amazing, and the covers have been consistently brilliant with this as well. The colour palette really plays a big part in it as well. James has got the comic now, so I don't know if he can reveal who does the colours on this. It's from Image. Mm-hmm. I think it's only is it a $2.99 book?
I think you'll find the artist might do the colouring.
Oh.
Colin Norman does the whole thing.
Colour no, maybe. Credit. Is it $2.99?
$3.50.
$3.50. Definitely worth the money. Really enjoying it. I don't know how many issues it's going to run for. Hopefully a few. It's great. Through each issue, there's been a little bit of a shadow of something else, and that's something I'm really looking forward to coming out a bit later on as well. The second book I'm going to talk about is issue 19 of Jennifer Blood, written still written by Al Ewing, of course it is, mm-hmm. with art by Cuba Boll. God, she's really lost it, hasn't she?
Yes, it's all gone a bit wrong for Jennifer.
She's gone loco. She is a Fruit Loop.
Coco Loco.
Has she actually gone to Acapulco as well? I haven't read it yet. Since the start of a new arc.
She's still on a journey.
Shit got really real at the end of the last
issue, didn't it? Oh, God. It's this downward spiral of this woman who thought she had the whole revenge thing under control, and really it just hasn't. And
I think I described the last issue as gut-wrenching.
Yeah, well, that was not an understatement. You just don't know what's going to happen. How is she ever going to get out of this? And her kids are involved. It's just... It feels like... You just can't see a good ending at all.
And nor should there be.
No,
really.
I know, exactly. But there's still the whole... It's the Dexter effect that she started off doing, you know, killing bad people who'd done bad things. And, you know, there was some sort of honour... Really, back of your mind, you know, there was some justification for actually killing them, even though it's out and out murder. But she's just gone mental, and she's just killing completely innocent.
She's through the looking glass, baby.
She's just killing innocent bystanders. But it's the sort of protection, the motherly protection she has for her kids as well, really comes through quite strongly in this issue. It's just it's just them and her now, and she'll do anything to protect them. And
apart from not kill people.
Mm. Well, that won't protect them. How would that protect them?
Apart from not being a psychopathic killer, she'd do anything to protect her children.
Is there a planned end to this?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Well, I just can't see it ending well. I'm still really enjoying it, though. Jennifer Blood always has your hooks. Has its hooks into you, doesn't it?
It does.
Just when you think, oh, I really, really like it, but I should pick up and trade it. It'd be really good to read it back to back. And then you're just like, no. After the end of each issue, you're like, no, we should watch it.
But it's something I should look for in trade, yeah?
Oh, God,
because I haven't read any of it.
To clarify, next issue of Harvest is the last one.
Oh, right. Does it specify in the book? Okay. Oh, okay. That's interesting. Oh.
Next issue's 5 of 5.
Okay. So, sorry, listener, you're probably a bit... It's probably...
Well, collect soon, though,
won't it? Yeah, we'll collect soon. Christmas around the corner. It's not the end of an arc, then. It will actually be the end of the run.
It says in the back, 5 and 5. In the
4 or 5. Oh, yes, back,
inside back cover.
Yeah. Okay, so... we have to pick up and...
Penultimate. That's penultimate issue.
It is penultimate.
Wow.
Penultimate.
It didn't feel like that, so it'll be interesting to see what happens. Oh, well.
Action the back, shadow, final issue
the
coming
back.
Out.
Shadow thing that's been happening, that should come out, that'd be good. Jennifer Blood's just such a guilty pleasure. It's really good. Yeah, that is very, very, very gory.
Guilty in a way that it actually makes you feel guilty that you like the character.
No, because I like and hate her. I know that she's a horrible person. I later, yeah. I later, later.
That's not a word, James.
He's now.
Later's okay. A word. So if, you know, from the point of view of she's doing really horrible things, but you still really want to know what's going to happen to her. So, but, you know, not soap opera-y, more interesting. Good stuff.
I will have to take a look at it. Okay, Stumptown number 3. $3.99 from Oni Press. It's Stumptown, The Case of the Baby in the Velvet Case. So it's the second mystery. It's the second mystery in this series. Written by Greg Rucker, with art by Matthew Southworth, and colour by Rico Renzi with Matthew Southworth. I always forget her name. I think it's Dex. But it's about a female private investigator who has ended up trying to. She's ended up being hired to try and find a guitar by this that's been lost by the guitarist in this up and coming sort of super popular band, and the DEA or the FBI, there are federal agents also on the case. She's not exactly that much of a social animal, so when the federal agents come in and they're really abrasive with her, she reacts in kind, and so there's lots of conflict going on in this. But at the end of the last issue, there was a peculiar break in her case, sort of dropped into her lap, and she doesn't trust where this break has come from. But this was a really great issue. I'm not really doing it much justice because we are three issues into a story that's very much kind of a mystery story, so there's not a lot I can say about it. One thing that is really cool in this issue, though, is we see a little bit more of the main character's relationship with her younger brother who has Down syndrome. There's an interaction in there that's quite heartbreaking, but really, really well realised and well played. Lots of twists and turns in the plot and lots of kind of excitement. But one thing that really got me about this issue was that some of the art and colouring in it, especially on a couple of pages in the middle, a couple of quiet pages in the middle, just absolutely gorgeous. The art's just incredible on this. And I'm such a big fan of Greg Rucker anyway. It's good. But it did make me kind of feel like I want to go back and read the other two issues and read this, because it's very, the pacing is really solid, but it feels like I not remembering the previous two issues as well as I could do doesn't necessarily help. That carries through to the Manhattan Project number 7, which I think might be a bit late. I'm not sure.
Feels like a long time.
Yeah, there's a note.
We've had a long month, haven't we?
There's a note from Jonathan Hickman in the back about how it's a bit late. I don't tend to notice when books are really late because I don't tend to notice when things are due out. But it has been a little while, and we are getting into the point. This is a Jonathan Hickman book with art by Nick Patara and lovely muted colours by Jordi Belair. Lovely idiosyncratic colours by Jordi Belair. It's the story of an alternate history of America's, I guess their science programs or whatever in the wake of World War II. But it's in this issue it starts to take in the Russian program as well that was introduced recently, and whereas previously the comic has very much focused on one character at a time and it's been like self-contained issues, the last couple of issues have been suggesting a wider thing that's about to happen and that's about to go completely crazy. There are plans in the footing for the scientists to start following their own agendas, and where we've had the government, especially the American government, introduced as characters with, I think it's, there is a very handy guide in the back. So, with FDR as an AI, who is a computational super genius, but the current president, Harry S. Truman, who is not a genius, it says very assuredly not a genius.
He is a proper Mitt Romney.
Yes. They obviously aren't happy that they aren't necessarily in control of what's going on anymore. It's quite a crazy issue, and I do think that I need to go back and read the last few issues, but it's still so gorgeous and so weird and full of ideas. And I love the way, I'm assuming it's Jonathan Hickman who's doing the design on this book, because it does kind of look like his books, his pre-Marvel books that he used to do the art and writing on. Just gorgeous design and gorgeous comic. I like it.
On that note, talking about the Russian space program, it reminds me of an email I was sent this week. You've probably seen it. It's a gift from MIT, the Museum of Space, I think they have there. And it talks about the early part of the American space program, and they were faced with the problem that they took ballpoint pens up there and they wouldn't work. And millions of dollars of investment, they came up with a pen that, you know, can basically, the astronaut pen that can write upside down. If you're a fan of Seinfeld, there's an episode about the astronaut's pen. It's fantastic. And at the end it says, when faced with the same problem, the Russians used a pencil. And it's a Russian space pencil, which I think is quite...
awesome.
Quite delightful. Sorry.
Now, what if you're not a fan of Seinfeld? Is there another example?
I didn't mean to mention Seinfeld. I just find that the whole thing of the Americans spending millions of pounds to get around this issue when the Russians just took a pencil up in the space instead, because it did the job just as adequately.
When you have several million dollars, every problem looks like a space pen.
Was that the first time you'd heard that?
I think I'd heard it before, but I was just sent the was sent the email again today, and Nick's review brought that to mind. I'm sorry, man, you can edit that out, that's fine.
No, it's okay, I'll leave that in, because it was fascinating.
Take the pen, Jerry! Take the pen!
2000 AD, 1808, after the wonderful triumph of the format that we had last week, this issue continues the momentum on all of the stories. ABC Warriors was a really, really good... You haven't read it yet.
Yeah. Just read.
ABC Warriors was a really, really good episode this week as well, though. All of the other stories continue to be awesome. The simping detective gets about as close to being litigation fodder as anything I've seen in a comic, though. It's great. It's really, really good. The Judge Dredd story, it continues to be excellent. The interesting thing about the Judge Dredd story is that so soon after Day of Chaos, this story seems to have a much smaller scale, in that it is focusing mainly on Judge Dredd and an investigation he's on, but the stakes, the fact that they've managed to write it in such a way and craft a story in such a way that the stakes still feel really high for Dredd specifically, is pretty cool. It's pretty impressive.
It's very Batman-y. It's cool.
You can tell that you're enjoying 2008, because I think you reviewed it every week for probably last month or so.
It's been fucking brilliant for ages. It's well worth banging on about how good 2000 AD is. It's just so fucking good.
But so props to all of the people involved with that. I am really enjoying this, the Cold Deck story. What's interesting is it's a very similar story. The idea at its core is very, very similar to Skyfall.
What I love about 2000 AD, which I think they're doing at the moment, is the Dredd story is huge and epic and sprawling, yet cut up into these really accessible episodes. So it's only ever a few weeks before there's another jumping on point where you can, even if you haven't read like what's gone on 2 years hence, 2 years past, you can still get into it. It's just so good.
It is pretty cool. I like it a lot. Okay, the final thing I got was I picked up the Leeds Comic Art Festival Anthology 2012 Thought Bubble Anthology. It's peculiar. I think it might have been in this format last year.
Yeah, it was.
Where it's kind of newspaper format.
Yeah, it's exactly the same.
But folded to fit American style. Which I find a little bit annoying, to be honest, because it makes it slightly more difficult to read it, but never mind. But it's US dollars, $3.99. That's $3.99 in US dollars. I don't know why I had so much trouble explaining
that. I think in pounds that's $3.99, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. In British currency it's $3.99. Yeah. Yes. I'm not even sure if this was an issue with it last year, that it's, as anthologies go, it really is basically a collection of one or two page vignettes, which isn't necessarily problematic, but read all at once the way I did earlier on at lunchtime, it can be a little bit, you just get going with one writer and artist or drawther, and then that's finished and you're on to the next one. It's a bit unusual me saying that as a possible negative, considering it's basically very similar to Elephant Words in that respect. But
I don't think we care for that either, do we?
No. But there are some really good contributions to it. There are people like Tony Harris and Sean Phillips and Scotty Young and Gail Simone and Tula Lote, who I think was on, who did two stories. She drew one story for Gail Simone, one story for Warren Ellis. Both were gorgeous, and both, I think, were really nicely written vignettes. But again, the art, this format really favours the artist, because you don't really necessarily get enough time to see what the writer can do, but you get to see the art and it's amazing. There's a Kate Beaton strip there. I don't want to miss anyone.
Lee Gallagher.
draws a story which gets to see him do a pretend Hulk. It's not the Hulk, but it's obviously the Hulk. Right. And it's gorgeous. I really liked it. And yeah, that's with Ivan Brandon, who I think is an American writer. There's an Emma Vicelli story in there, Matthew Sherritt one. And yeah, Lee Budgie Barnett, who I know, who is a very good writer, mm-hmm. right, that there's a story of his in here. There's also a Strontium Dog story in here, which is a little bit weird, because it's not really...
Is that Boo Cook?
Yes. Mm. Did you recognise the art straight away?
Yeah, it's and it's an Elephant Men crossover.
Yes. It's a very, very pretty anthology, but there are points when I would have liked to have seen more from the contributors, but it's nice. For $3.99, it's definitely worth it. There's loads of stuff in there. It's good.
Cool. Thanks, Nick.
I liked it.
Hey, Momcast, it's Max. It's been a while since I've sent a thing in, and I am sorry. I blame comics. I've had nothing that nice to say about them in the limited capacity I'm able to consume them in of late. But this week's seen the release of a comic I've actually been quite excited about, so here I am. It's Shadow Man number 1 by Pat Zurcher and Justin Jordan. I've never read the original Shadow Man series from way back in the 90s because I was too young or something, but Valiant's relaunch hasn't had a bad note yet, and Patch was the artist on the first Marvel trade I ever bought, and someone who's had a huge change to his style in the last year that's made him a veritable force to be reckoned with, so you know, I had to be there. I'm also told people like Justin Jordan's other comics, but he does nothing for me one way or the other, so, you know, that's got good enough odds, surely. Anyway, Shadow Man is about Jack Boniface, son of the previous Shadow Man, who appeared to lose his life taking down the villain Dark, spelt Q-U-E for comic book naming reasons, as he lives life, learns a bit about his absent parents, and faces supernatural forces intent on taking his life. That last one's important, as it leads to him taking the mantle Shadow Man, in the slightly obvious cliffhanger of the issue. I'll be honest, it's a mixed package, albeit one that still comes in as my favourite debut issue of the year, which when you consider the existence of Captain Marvel, Gambit, Archer and Armstrong, and the second series of Carbon Grey, it's really saying something. The positives are clear as day. It has strong pacing, a frankly dizzying sense of design, and a really decent synergy between the writing and art, something aided by Patch being co-writer with Justin. It's a tight package, with gore that doesn't feel gratuitous and chatting scenes that don't just feel like talking heads. But then there's a bit of rough dialogue to contend with, although it does do a lot of it really well with all this decompression, avoiding exposition dumps and similar trappings. Some awkward staticness that comes with the CG elements to the art. If you've seen Justice League Dark's art by Mikael Janin, you'll know exactly the thing I'm talking about. And a bit of a colour issue I have, with a little inconsistency in just how deep or light a shade Jack's skin should be, Although that's probably more on the lighting changes than anything. Okay, now I've said that, it actually sounds far less a mixed package than I initially thought. So let's disregard the bad and call it what it is. An amazing comic. And being from Valiant, I have every confidence that it will only improve upon itself as new issues come in. So, you know, big ups to Patch Jordan and everyone else involved, and you'll need to go get this comic now. Last quick note, I have a new podcast. It's called Friendship, Effort, Victory, and it's about the history and inner workings of the Japanese anthology Weekly Shonen Jump, something I've had a bit of a hard-on for the last 8 years, it being responsible for several works that have had profound effects on my life. There's currently one full episode and one minisode out, and if I can have an ego for a second, I think they're actually quite good. Like, they're okay, they're accessible, they're good, they're alright, they're fine. The full episodes are out-and-out attempts to give accessible explanations of specific works and the background stuff that was involved in it. And the minisodes are basically just like these contributions I do for you, shilling people my utterly meaningless opinion on works that don't warrant a full episode. You can find it on iTunes or over at friendshipeffortvictory.wordpress.com, where it updates weekly. The new episode's out on Saturday, so tune in. Shameless self-promotion over? Yeah? Okay. Back to the show.
So, did anything interesting happen this week in comics? Yeah. Anything that wasn't... anything unusual? Anything unexpected?
Yep. Rob Liefeld.
No,
had one or two things.
No,
not Rob Liefeld.
No.
Anything
that,
else?
That name's banned.
No.
What have we been talking about since one of the things we've been talking about since DC 52 is we don't know what the real place for Vertigo is at this point. That's one of the things we've been talking about specifically.
I think since the beginning of this podcast we've been talking about our fears for Vertigo, but most specifically since DC 52.
The number of previously Vertigo stories that have found their way in the DC, found their place in the DC 52, like Animal Man, Swamp Thing, JLA Dark. So DC have announced that they are that. I think is it issue? Which issue of it of Hellblazer is going to be the last one?
On the 200 and something, isn't it?
No, I think it's 300.
Do you think it's just because John Constantine's so busy with everyone else at the moment?
I think it might be that.
I've caught up on comics recently, and he pops up everywhere.
He's like a magical wolverine.
And he always makes me want to go for a cigarette whenever I see him.
That's fair enough. So, Hellblazer's going to be finishing at Vertigo, and I think it's at issue 300, but I'm not sure, because it has been a while since I've read it regularly. And it's going to be... There's going to be a Constantine title at DC... at DC Prime, but I think Constantine was the only continuing monthly title left at Vertigo anyway, wasn't it? It seemed clear to me this was coming.
That does make sound sense. I know people are sad to see Hellblazer go, but like I said, he's popped up everywhere, so he's tied in with the DC 52 and continuity and things. The thought of anything happening to Vertigo really is very, very sad, and it's sad that we haven't got the ongoings that we used to have, but I can understand why it's happened. Whether or not it will be good, we won't know until we see the first issue.
You're saying you can understand, you're not making a value judgment about the decision. You can
No, that's what I mean. Yeah. I accept but don't embrace. I can understand why it's happened.
You've enjoyed JLA Dark.
Yeah, and he's turned up in I Vampire and
Internet Vampire.
Yes, and there's a couple of others he's popped up in.
I'm wrong anyway, because there's still Fables and Fairest are still running.
Unwritten.
At Vertigo.
Yeah,
and
Unwritten.
But is Unwritten...
And Sweet Tooth.
Do Unwritten and Sweet Tooth look like they're finite runs?
Unwritten felt like it was finite when I was reading it. And I didn't drop it because it's not very good. It's just I was finding it unsatisfying reading in monthlies. Portions.
So maybe, I mean, Fables looks like it's... looks like, even if it wasn't originally intended to, I think that might be an ongoing. I don't know. The thing is, it's been apparent from looking at the way DC do things, the fact that they felt the need to do things like DC 52, the way they've been treating him, the way they've been treating all of their... what they see as their prime... like properties, because that's how they've obviously been thinking about it, and the fact that they felt the need to do a complete continuity wide reboot rather than just like do what Marvel are doing, which is sort of just create new jumping on points for people, suggests that this is the sort of decision they make. Hellblazer was always an aberration in this in this situation, because there weren't any other DC. There wasn't any more confusion of stuff coming out from Vertigo that still exists in the DC universe. Once Swamp Thing and Animal Man went over to the DC 52, the main DC Prime or whatever you want to call it.
Sure.
This was always kind of on the cards.
Yeah.
I think all we can hope is that it's going to be just as good.
Mm. Well, I mean, I don't know, because I haven't been and I love Pete Milligan, but I haven't been reading Hellblazer.
I've only ever really read Hellblazer in trades.
I loved the first 100 issues, and I didn't really hang on for much. Like, the odd run after that I read. Mm. But I mean, people are excited about it. So, and it's good, because after the American election and the whole Jimmy Savile thing, people, you know, that seems to have died down a little bit. So people have, like...
Olympics is gone.
Have a lot of energy for discussing this stuff, so...
That's true.
Good.
I think it's good. I had a little bit of an exchange with Newsarama, I think, about with somebody on Twitter earlier on, because I was a bit snarky because the way they did their headline was they said Hellblazer finishes after 300 issues, but the big news is that Constantine number one will be coming out from DC, and I was like, really, that's the big news? No, is it? A brand new reboot of a title from DC in the last 2 years is the big news. But they roundly put me in my place on Twitter, and they were absolutely right that that is going to be the big news. The big news is he going to be pulled into the DC 52? Is he going to be American now? Or no, he's not going to be American. I'm just being silly because of the film.
We don't talk about that.
Is he still going to be able to do this? Is it still going to be as dark? And actually, like, the fact that it ran for 300 years. 300 years!
Oh, I can't believe it. 300 years since Alan Moore introduced him in Swamp Thing. I can't believe it.
But the fact that...
The 500-year-old Alan Moore must be absolutely livid.
Mm. But a mature reader's comic that has often been sophisticated and quite adult, and, you know, was a horror comic at a time when they were very, very rare, managed to last for 300 issues at a mainstream publisher and still kind of sit in both of those worlds and still sort of exist in that universe. It's quite impressive, quite a big story.
I think it can still continue its themes when the new book comes out, but we won't know until it comes out, and I will be buying it. So.
I'm sure it'll be a DC Dark title.
Yeah, of course. Yes,
you would.
It's not going to be in the Batman universe, is it?
Is he going to have like one of those pathetic electronic inhaler things instead of a cigarette and
comb his hair and shave and
actually wear a tie? No.
And
drink tea?
I, as a non-smoker, want to talk about your spotlight now, James.
Okay. Where's my research?
You've got research? You went to Wikipedia.
I'm going to talk about the 10th Asterix book.
What's it called?
It's
Jane,
called...
what's it called?
Asterix and the Legionary.
Jesus Christ.
What?
It's no and.
Oh, yeah.
Still no and.
Well, can't I just put and in there? Asterix.
No, because it would fundamentally change the title, because Asterix becomes a legionary.
So, hang
Asterix
on.
It's not the Asterix legionary.
And a legionary.
It's because it wasn't in front of me. I'm sorry, listener.
Let me just make a note of this so that I can put it on the site.
And now I've spoiled the story.
Let me just make a note of this so I can put it on the site later on. Asterix the Legendary.
Asterix the Legendary Legionary and...
What?
Stuff.
No, I'm not. I was mocking James then, pretty much.
Oh, that's a nice colour printout you have there.
It is a nice colour printout. Wow. I forgot to set my...
Have you got a colour printer at home?
I forgot to set the print parameters. I have, yeah. I forgot to set the print parameters to black
Why
and white.
Why aren't we putting out our own comics from your printer at home?
That's a very good question. And one that will remain unanswered.
You're a great drawer. I've seen it.
You have seen it. I work with a lot of great collaborators on that comic, but yes... I think that was a highlight of the last 24-hour comic.
Asterix and the Legend Head. Asterix and Legionnaire's Disease.
Asterix and Legionnaire's Disease.
You're a Legionnaire's Disease.
Yeah, that's what she said. He's the 10th...
In your pants.
That's it. She's a... Oh, Christ. What is it? Here we go. As I said to you earlier, here we go. A potty-mouthed review of an all-ages comic book.
Oh, don't swear.
Well, no, I've sworn through every single...
I'll give you a polo if you don't swear.
Fuck off. Asterix Legionary is the 10th Asterix book in the Asterix comic book series by René Goscinny and Albert Uderzo. And do print off the Wikipedia page so you can read along with my review.
Yes.
As with all of them, it was serialised in Pilote magazine. So in issues 368, 389, first appearing in that magazine in 1966, published in its longer form in French in 67. It was first published in this country in 1970.
Thank you, James.
That was before I was born.
It was, yeah.
That was a long time before I was born.
What was that voice then?
I think that might have been my...
That's his Wikipedia voice.
Kenneth Williams' voice.
Oh, it was a bit weird. I didn't like it. Go on, then.
Asterix and the...
Go on, get a move on.
Asterix and the Legionnaire's Disease starts in the Gaulish village that we know so well, with an attractive young girl coming back to the village after studying in a Condatum.
James, you have a fact about said girl, haven't you? And about how you used to feel about the girl.
Fuck me, I'll come to that.
Oh.
Stop bloody telegraphing my review. Jesus Christ.
This is a Jane commentary. Is this what you're extra for?
Not spoiling it, listener, but James is going to talk about how he fancied the female character in a moment.
Oh, I didn't...
You've broken my heart, Jane. You went against the family. You broke my heart. You're like the Fredo of the podcast.
Well, Fredo, you know, I'm young and up and coming. I need to take the power now.
I'm going to take you out for a fishing trip in a minute.
They didn't go on a fishing trip. They went to get a ring from somewhere and put it somewhere else. What, Frodo, are you talking about?
I didn't mean to drop no eaves. But he went against the family. He went with Mickey fucking Chan, whatever his name was, didn't he?
What?
He told them what Michael was up to. Michael was looking after the Ring of Doom, wasn't he? And Frodo went and saw Gandalf, Mickey Chan.
Mickey Chan, Mickey fucking Wong.
Yeah, and went against the family. He broke my heart!
Where was Gollum during all this?
At Cuba.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cuba Gooding Jr.
And Miami.
You're what?
With Leonard Rossiter. That was it, wasn't it? Leonard Rossiter, he was out in the Miami.
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 I was showing an interest in your review. I'll be quiet now.
So it all starts off in this little Gaulish village we know so well. And this young woman from who's been away at Condatum University, which is, we know that as Rennes in modern day towns.
France, you mean?
Modern day France towns. Has come back. She's called Panacea, and Jane is right. When I was young, I thought Panacea was absolutely gorgeous. I had quite a crush on her.
Were you literally going to say that when you got to the second page?
No.
As
does Obelix.
Obelix has a crush on her.
Who immediately falls madly in love with Panacea.
Did you see him as a template for you when you were younger? What? I'm just saying, he fancied her and James fancied her too.
A fat dullard.
He's not a dullard, yeah, he's the strongest man in the village.
But you see her before you find out that he fancies her.
Oh, did you fancy her from the first panel?
I don't know. My feelings were, to be honest, as I said to Jane, I actually had a bit more of a thing about Geriatrix's wife, but let's not go there.
Oh.
Whose name escapes me because she hasn't been introduced at this point in the series. So Obelix just doesn't know what to do. He's absolutely madly in love with Panacea.
He's at sixes and sevens.
He is at sevens and eights.
Is that how that goes?
Yeah. So he spends a little bit of time mooning about. He tries to give her a menhir as a present, which is fucking stupid.
But he tied it up with a ribbon.
He does put a lovely ribbon on it, which is a beautiful, beautifully wrapped menhir, which is nice. He picks her flowers in the forest, and he takes her the flowers, and he finds out that, unfortunately, her beloved, her betrothed, her partner, Tragicomics, has been essentially press-ganged into the Roman Legion, where Julius Caesar is fighting a campaign against Scipio. Which I don't think's right. Scipio, of course, was a hero of the Punic Wars, but I think that was at least 50 years
this before. Is not that podcast.
I think that's at least 50
years. It's not that podcast. Punic
Wars. Ha, least, can I ask you a question?
It was at least 50 years before Howell. Asterix and Obelix decide, Obelix, madly in love, decides that he hates to see Panacea so upset. Asterix and Obelix go and see Chief Faisal Statistics, and they get permission to go off to Rennes, as it's known now, and try and find Tragicomics. So they go to Condatum, and they find the recruitment office, where Asterix and Obelix learn some lessons about politeness. Obelix is confused because he was asked to politely ask a Roman patrol where the recruitment office is, and he beat them up first.
Oh.
And Asterix says, no, that's not how to be polite to people. You've got to ask them nicely. But when they get to the guard at the recruitment office, Asterix gets a little frustrated with the conversation and ends up sparking out the guard. And Obelix quite rightly says, well, I don't see the difference between your politeness and my politeness. Thank you very much, Asterix.
See, Asterix is sending in mixed messages. I don't see Obelix as the fat dullard that you describe him as. I think he's big-boned.
Yeah.
And I think
there's a lot of fucking gravy around them bones, haven't there?
He's got a wise outlook on the world. He's like the magic fool.
You need to read more Asterix books, mate, because that's not how I parse his character
at all. He's magical in that he is super-powered all the time.
He's very much like Lance Armstrong, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, Lance Armstrong fell into a vat of EPO when he was a baby.
Yeah.
And that's why he was good at the cycling. Actually, do you know what? That will be addressed in a couple of books' times.
Excellent.
Eventually he finds out that Tragicomics has actually been shipped out to Africa already.
Damn it!
So they
they're not going to Africa. No, never mind, carry on.
They have to... they do go to Africa.
Okay.
It's not as bad as you think. There's only one racially insensitive drawing of an African man in this book. So they decided to join the... much to the consternation of the guard, who's taking quite a battering at this point, they go back outside and join the queue of... various members of the wider Roman Empire who wish to join the legionary. We have a couple of Goths, a Greek, an Egyptian, a Briton, a Belgian, and two Gauls.
What does the Greek look like?
Looks like that.
He's a scrawny little man.
He is quite very scrawny for a Greek. He's actually...
he's got funny facial hair and everything.
Yeah, you'd think he's one of the thinnest. So we meet them. He's never at a loss. And we meet...
never at a loss.
We also meet selective employment. That's funny. Selective employment tax, the British. Gastronomics, the Belgian. Hemispheric and allegoric, the Gothic members. And tennis net, the Egyptian. All of whom become part of Asterix's cohort as they go through training. There's a really lovely sight gag as they go through the basic... medical that you have to go through before joining. Allegoric the Goth looks massive. He's got this massive cloak around his shoulders, looks like a huge hulking man. But then we see him step out of his cloak when he goes for his medical, and he's totally a little skinny man inside it. It's funny, he was just a big cloak all along. So Asterix and Obelix go through basic training. Is a very lovely moment where they go to the quartermaster and Obelix asks for his uniform and claims he's medium. And his breastplate goes flying off and hits his poor instructor, who becomes his long-suffering instructor as we go through basic training. Also
played by Arlie Emery.
Absolutely, yeah, that's correct. There's also the characters that are in the cohort are quite nicely developed amongst... along the lines of racial stereotypes or regional stereotypes. So the Greek spends much of his time negotiating his wage and refusing to pay tax. the Egyptian is perpetually confused because he thinks he's in a hotel. The Briton is very polite and enjoys the bad food. And obviously the German and the Belgian just enjoy drinking beer, which is very cute. So as I say... they go through their training, and there's loads of really... it is, as with a lot of Asterix books, mostly poking fun at Europeans and sort of some of the sort of stereotypes we have of each other in that great continent of ours.
I love it.
Yeah. And there's some really cute stuff with the cook where they persuade him to cook nice things for them. And try as they might, the instructors try to get them to concentrate, but they can't. Asterix and Obelix are in a hurry to go and rescue Tragicomics. As I said, there's lovely, various lovely set pieces that I enjoyed a great deal. And it is really good fun, considering actually, in terms of the story, it kind of puts a halt on the adventure. The pace never lets up. It is really, the basic training bit is really, really cute. It's really good fun.
Boot camp bits are one of my favourite things in these sorts of stories. Which one of them either kills himself or tries to kill himself?
I don't really want to spoil that.
Okay.
But it's actually... I haven't actually spoken about him yet, but it's the Swiss Gamma Pylorix.
Were you freestyling then?
Yeah, a little
bit. That was brilliant. I wish you could do a beatbox.
Yeah, rock a microphone in stereo. Eventually they make their way to Massilia, where they are going to set sail, as I say, to this... I'm sure Scipio didn't fight against
Caesar. I'm sure it doesn't matter.
Anyway... they meet the pirates, naturally, where we find the slightly racially insensitive depiction of an African man.
It's literally one panel.
There's two.
It's literally two panels.
And you'll see him again.
Okay.
There's a rather lovely bit, but obviously the captain says we've been framed by Jericho, and there's Nastris, and apparently Jericho is an ancient Gaulish artist, which is hilarious.
That's quite funny. If it was translated today, it'd probably be we've been framed by Jeremy Beadle.
Jeremy Beadle, they'd say.
Harry Hill. Beadle's
Harry Hill, that's right. There's some lovely wordplay with the... artistic wordplay, again, with the Egyptian character. I quite like the bit where they're giving the captain of the galleon that they're taking from Massilia to Africa, and he calls in various unpleasant things like old hairy hands and old hairy nose. It's very funny. Eventually they turn up at the camp where the Egyptian has a very nice moment with Caesar where he thinks he's a red cloak.
Mm-hmm.
It's a holiday camp he's gone to. Obviously, they're keen to find out what's happened to Tragicomics. They can't find him in the camp. They find out when they talk to the spy H2SO4, which I forgot to find out what that is, a chemical compound for.
Sodium hydroxide, I think.
Oh, right, okay.
I'm going to have to look it up, though, now.
Good stuff. They find out that, actually, Tragicomics has been captured, so they break out of the camp they're in, head over to Scipio's, but in the process, they basically start the battle that Scipio and Caesar are ruminating over who should start first. Obviously, they rescue Tragicomics and make a tearful goodbye to their cohort, whereby they make their way back to the village and reunite Pandora and Tragicomics, and they have a feast
under now the for starlight a feast.
At the end. It is, although I was going to call it a review, but obviously it's a synopsis, is relatively brief. Genuinely one of my favourites. There's just so much charm, so much wordplay. The characters are really, like I say, the humour is based upon stereotypes, but it's gentle. And the interplay between the characters and Asterix's cohort is so cute, it's so nice. You really feel a sort of sense of cohesion amongst these characters really quickly. Also, you've got a point where the art as well has reached this sort of peak of richness. It's such a sort of sumptuous world they live in. You know, every boar that Obelix eats makes you drool. Every town they visit makes you want to, you know, travel there and visit. It's beautiful at this point. It's a real sort of rip snorter of a story. Thoroughly enjoyable and made me feel nice in my tummy. I even like the two commanders as well. They try so hard to take command and fail so badly.
Are they laughing or crying on the front there?
They are crying.
So, if the children at home want to read this, that's Asterix the Loganberry.
Asterix the Loganberry.
And the Loganberry.
Asterix and the Loganberry. and the Legionnaire's Disease.
I was wrong, it's sulfuric acid. And I know a poem about it. Let me see if I can remember it. Lucy took a sip of drink and melted to the floor because what she thought was H2O was H2SO4.
That's
how I remember it. So it's funny that I didn't remember that it was sulfuric acid.
Bravo.
We used to have a book in the sixth form where people used to do little rhymes and stuff, and there were a lot of horrible ones about poor Lucy. I don't know what she'd ever done to deserve them.
I've been listening to the audiobook of Bill Bryson's book Home, and I rather like the cautionary tales of Victorian children. And he tells the one, there was a German doctor, about a young boy called Young Sucker Thumb, and he was warned that if he sucked his thumb, an evil imp would come and suck it, chop his thumb off. And indeed, at the end, he ends up with no thumbs because he chops his. He gets mutilated, and that's the cautionary tale for young Victorian children: so don't suck your thumb, or you'll be horribly mutilated.
They all turned out all right, though, didn't they?
Absolutely, yeah, definitely.
Thank you for that, James. Yes, that was wonderful and lovely. I like that cover; it's pretty.
Yeah, excellent.
No, why have we talked about food so damn much?
I don't know. There's next one I'm going to do, Chieftain Shield. There's a Def Leppard connection.
A Def Leppard, the band, not a Def Leppard.
No, Def Leppard, the band connection.
So not spelled properly.
No, D-E-F.
D-E-F.
Yeah, and then the Leopard's only got one arm. I think it was the Leopard only had one arm.
No, the drummer. The drummer from Def Leppard's only got one arm. It was a lyric in a Bloodhound Gang song.
That's right.
What are you guys doing this week? Anything interesting?
Oh, gosh. Dinner at Life Partner Steve's parents tomorrow evening, so that'd be nice.
Anything else?
I might go and see my mum this weekend, but I need to look less tired.
Oh. You look fine.
I like the top you're wearing tonight.
Thanks.
And you've been jogging. You look very healthy at the moment.
Yes, but I look very tired. My mum worries about me when I'm tired.
I didn't
just say, mum, I'm getting old, mate. What am I meant to do?
Yeah. Do you call your mum mate?
No. I do. She's my mum's quite short. I do rest my head, my chin on her head sometimes. That's quite funny.
Mate. Well, that's because you're
But that's the word you say. But you say mate a lot, so.
Don't you, mate?
Why don't you fuck off, mate?
Yeah, why don't you fuck off, mate? What are you doing this week, James?
I'm going to go and walk the dogs on Lepe Beche. And I don't know what else I'm going to go and do.
That sounded a bit sweary, didn't it?
Lepe Beche.
Lepe Beche.
Yeah, did a bit.
And look at the Isle of Wight and go, oh, it looks close, isn't it? You could almost walk there.
Oh, wow.
That's pretty much my exact. I have...
When you go to leap, you have to say, oh, doesn't it look close? Oh, it's almost like you could walk there. That's what you have to say when you go to Leap Beach.
You're prepared. You know exactly what to say then. Yeah. That's good, because I find small talk really difficult.
And I want a cup of tea in the car and a Snickers bar, because that's what you've got to do. You've got to park down the bottom car park, so you're looking at the Isle of Wight going, oh, isn't it close?
That's like you could walk there.
It's like you could walk there. And then you've got to have a cup of tea from the cafe and a Snickers bar while you're looking at it, just sort of, you know, in a silent, joyless car, sitting... Look at the Isle of Wight. Just occasionally turns your pocket. It's close, isn't it?
Nick, what are you doing this weekend?
I don't.
You going to the Isle of Wight?
I predict finishing Batman Lego, which would be quite good with my wife. It's nice playing video games with her. Although it means I don't feel like playing video games on my own. And all the really good games I play on my own. But Alex. Alex at work tried to offload a copy of Halo 4. He'd accidentally bought too many copies of Halo 4, but not cheap enough for me. I would have liked to have played Halo 4, but I'm not going to. Excuse me, I'm feeling a bit bilious.
Doesn't he exchange it?
I think he's going to end up doing that. I think he just wanted to give me first refusal.
Oh, that's nice.
And
you
did. And I did, yeah. Mm. And at some point, some more games and stuff will turn up. I've ordered some stuff off Amazon and eBay. I'm very excited because I've ordered a daily diary, Moleskine.
Moleskine. Hello, Molly.
I've ordered one of those from eBay. That should be coming soon. I'm quite excited about that.
Brilliant.
For next year.
Love Moleskine.
I do. Moleskine.
Moleskine.
And... there might be other stuff going on as well, but our weekend isn't booked, so I'm feeling pretty good about that. But there might be some stuff in the works that is not comic podcast related. But I will talk to the listener about that.
Okay.
Later. We have had a contribution, so thank you to contributor.
Thank you, contributor.
At least one contribution. And we should probably thank our listener, because they'll be presumably listening.
If you're not, there. We understand.
Thank you.
It's a bit of a Schrodinger's listener.
Hello, Schrodinger's listener.
Because are you eating some cheese?
We assume they're there, but we don't know, and they won't know till the end.
I just feel like right about now I'd be eating some cheese if I was listening.
I'd like to know if any of our listeners have ever had a cottage pie dinner from a chip shop. Oh, yeah. I wonder if it was localised to my local chip shop.
Why are you doing
shop.
This?
Right, we
now.
Should go. Thank you, listener.
Do talk to us. Do get in touch with us. Do tell us that you've listened to this. You can do it on Twitter, but you can send us emails. We like that too.
Yeah.
And remember iTunes, that's awesome. And yes, we should go then.
Okay. And remember the 5th of November.
Gunpowder, treason and seasonal.
Plot. Right.
I see no good reason why gunpowder treason should ever be forgot.
No, I see no reason.
What?
Not with Anonymous banging on about it all the time.
It's the poem.
Say again.
Remember the 5th of November, gunpowder, treason and plot.
Yeah.
I see no good reason why gunpowder season should ever be forgot.
That's near enough it.
But I got this desperate urge to say vampire season for no good reason.
Right, we should, yeah.
Yeah, okay. We should definitely go.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Love this title so much.
Yes.
But it makes my balls hurt when I read it.
I don't know if it's lasting through the reboot.
Oh, cockles. I often think about my reviews. You won't believe me, but I often think about my reviews while I'm reading my books.
No, you make it look effortless.
I need a visual aid, something that isn't that.
Legionary. Don't confuse the matter. Legionary.
Asterix the leisurely.
Asterix the leisurely. Leisurely asterix. Goes on holiday.
Leisure.
To sandals.
Relaxation and
so it's
leisure.
Legionary.
Legionary.
He's part of the legion.
Yeah.
He is a legionary.
And it's pronounced legionary.
Or we can say legionary.
I wanted to say legionary.
Okay, say legionary.
No, I'll go legionary. Ready?
It's a G though, not an S. Legionary.
Legionary.
That's it. I thought you said legionary.
Well, I keep thinking of lesion.
Yeah, which isn't nice. That's why I noticed it. He's got like, he meets a leper or something.
He must have met lepers. I mean, there were a lot of them about back then, weren't there?
Yes, there were lots of leopards.